Hello, howdy, and welcome to episode 114 of Wada Hockey, where we talk all things Texas hockey and the stories and culture that surround it. You guys know the drill. Before we get started, make sure to head over to all of our social media platforms, all at Wada Hockey. Give us a follow, like it, share it, subscribe to it. Yeah, do that on YouTube. It's been a while since I've been with you guys. Happy to be back. It has not been as long since I've been in the ears of the French fries. I did a very special kind of one-off episode with Jesse Pierce of the Bar Down Buttes podcast out of Minnesota. I know, crossing enemy lines, but it was a cool episode. It was
part
fun
of the open relationship that we're in.
Yeah. And you know what? There have been a lot of very mean and nasty interactions on social media between Wild fans and Stars fans. All I have to say is let peace reign free, because you guys are going to have so much free time up in Minnesota after Friday night that there's no point to place your anger, in what us Stars fans are doing. And you know, it's just sad because the little brother syndrome that they have up there thinking that this is their team down here. You people in Minnesota have no history when it comes to the NHL because we took it all. You guys stopped supporting your team because your owner was a ding dong. And then they ended up in Dallas and then we won a Stanley Cup. And now we've got the North Stars logo in our rafters. What do you guys have? You guys have a lot of time to pay off Ryan Suter's contract. But that being said, my name's Fink. We are back. Episode 114. We are here on a different night of recording. We're recording on Wednesday night. We might just drop this on you guys once we wrap this up. If Pat thinks this is a good enough episode to drop to the people without going like hardcore in the editing process, I don't know. We'll see. That being said, Pat, Jason, the OG3, we're back in full effect. Pat, how have you been? I wasn't with you guys last week, but that's okay. We're back and we're feeling froggy. Pat, how was your week?
It's been all right, man. Jason and I held it down last week. I've been, my voice doesn't sound... I think I have some like broadcaster deep bass voice going on.
It's very sultry.
Yeah. I've been sick this week. Allergies got up in my sinuses and eventually down into my chest on Monday. And it's not fun, but powering through. Haven't missed the games, which we'll get into. But yeah, hanging in there, man.
That's what we want. We just need you to hang in there. The playoffs are a long and exhausting journey.
Did you swing any clubs this weekend?
No, we went to Paris, which is where the allergies came from.
Okay.
A different blend than Dallas. It was a lot of fun though.
That's right.
Nice. Yeah.
Well, I do want to say before we continue, boys, that unfortunately the Florida Panthers have defeated the Boston Bruins in overtime, which that does zero favors for us here in Dallas. So we'll probably get a dumb dog shit start time of 8:30 or realistically 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, because that's exactly what two Central Time Zone teams need to have is a 9 p.m. start time. So thanks, Boston. I thought you guys had it
Might
in the bag,
as well.
But apparently not. You guys blew it. I'm gonna switch over, boys. I'm gonna switch over and watch the old Idaho Steelheads take on the Utah Grizz. So, Jason, how was your week, man? You all caught up on Ted Lasso? I have not started the new season yet, so please, no spoilers. Just believe.
Very caught up on it. Very happy with the episode we just wrapped up on. Oh my gosh,
did you cry?
Chef's kiss, dude. I did actually. So let's not talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. Because if I start talking about it...
Don't spoil it.
Waterworks, dude. Fucking waterworks. Every time.
Oh, boy.
every single time. But the weekend was a great show. Dude. Took it pretty low key. It was my nephew's birthday. Hung out with him. Went to on Saturday. I had to work in the morning. Had to work a fishing derby event. That was cool, but you know, that was a lot of fun. You gotta do it for the community, dog. Then Max went out there and fished too. That was cool. He didn't catch anything because he was more interested in playing in the playground. So that's what he did. While I kind of worked, and Kelly was there as well. And then my nephew showed up. They kind of had some fun too. But then it was his birthday, dog. And then we celebrated him, and then we took it easy on Sunday.
Nice. Heck yeah, man. We love that. Yeah. That's what we like to hear. Wait, so whose birthday? Was it
my nephew's? I have two nephews.
Okay.
Yeah. Luca, Noah, and it was Noah's birthday.
Just a couple strong names. You know what? Yeah. You know what other names are really strong, Jason?
Conway and Banks.
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah.
Nice.
Man, the Quack Attack is back, Jack. We are here. You are there. And if you are looking to replace that old moldy hockey bag with that busted zipper on it, go check out conwayandbanks.com. They make premium quality bags that are built to last. They include the removable organizers to keep all your gear organized. They keep everything dry with those waterproof materials and the giant vents. And my favorite feature is that built-in foot mat that keep my feet dry in those nasty, wet locker rooms. In 3 different sizes and 5 different colors, so you'll be sure to find one that you love. Get 10% off by using code WHATAHOCKEY10 and get your gear to the rink in
Oh yeah, it's back. It's back in a big way. I guess a little bit of a life update for me. I kind of spilled the beans today. I have been acquired by a new franchise. I first and foremost want to thank the Mid-Cities Junior Stars for allowing me to be part of their franchise over the last season, although it did not go the way that I think anyone wanted it to. I am happy to announce officially now that I will be transitioning over and working with the Lone Star and Texas Brahmas. For those that don't know, that is the NA3HL and NAHL team in North Richland Hills, formerly known as the Fort Worth Brahmas of the CHL that played out of the Fort Worth Coliseum. But now they play out of Nitex Sports Center, also known as the Shoebox. So if you are ever getting out to Nitex, let me know, because I'll be there. And yeah, I swung some sticks last week with my new roommate. And by new, I mean I've lived here for almost 2 months now, but my roommate. And yeah, I got to play TPC Las Colinas 4 seasons again. It was beautiful. Fantastic day. Shot absolutely atrocious. But I did birdie the par 3 second hole. I planted it about 6 feet from the pin and sunk the putt. It was just an unbelievable hole. It was beautiful. So that's really all I've got. You know, if we're going to get in some playoff talk, but before I do that, the homies over at Third Line Hockey, they need more beer leaguers. So if you are a beer leaguer like us and you love to travel, then Third Line Hockey is the perfect place for you. We're pumped to team up with Third Line Hockey, as we have for a couple of months now. They are bringing like-minded individuals together for hockey-filled excursions, places like Pittsburgh, Chicago, Denver. They will all be homes for upcoming drafts, and they are open to all skill levels, and the only requirement they have is that you have a good time doing it. Website is 3RD Line Draft, spelled like the British spell it, D-R-A-U-G-H-T, so thirdlinedraft.com. Also, give them a follow on Facebook, because they're going to be posting testimonials, updates, the jerseys that they're going to have for a lot of these upcoming drafts. So head over and follow them on Facebook as well. And last but certainly not least, before we get into the hockey, Sauce Toss, hashtag bags for beauties. With code WATASAUCE, you can get 10% off your entire order. So head over to saucetoss.com and make sure that you have your game for the summer, even though it's been raining almost all day here up in North Texas.
Terrible weather today.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. It's good relaxing weather, but it is a Wednesday.
It's not conducive to work.
It is not. It is quite the opposite. The Allen Americans, they are, let's see, I believe one win away from advancing to the next round of the Kelly Cup playoffs as they defeated the Kansas City Mavericks in overtime on Monday night, 1-0, 27 save performance by goalie Kevin Mandelis, who also played up in the NHL. He had a cup of coffee in the show this season. Jumbo Jack Combs, friend of the show, scored, making it a 1-0 victory with a 2-1 series lead. So game four is Friday night in Allen. I'm sorry. So they need to win two more. They lead 2-1 in the series. Jack Combs on the win. I'm proud of our group for hanging together and sticking to the game plan and head coach Chad Costello. It was such a big win for us tonight. Coming back home with a 2-1 series advantage is so clutch. Now we need to take care of business at home on Friday. Three stars of that game, no surprise. Mandelis, Combs, and Starrett from the Mavericks. That being said, there's really not much to talk about on the side of the Texas Stars because they had a first-round bye. They are going to be taking on the Rockhounds in the second series or second leg of the playoffs for the Calder Cup. So it kind of it's a weird vibe. They are the Central Division champions, though, so they'll at least get a banner for that because we know franchises like the Predators love putting banners up in the rafters. But that brings us to the headline of the show. Your Dallas Stars are on the brink of advancing to the next round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Well, yeah, might as well be on the power play because Foligno wanted to be
a dumb
dog.
Man, I cannot wait to talk about this PP, man.
Let's just dive right into it. The Dallas Stars defeated the Minnesota Wild in the most dominant game of the series, and that is including the 7-goal win that Marc-Andre Fleury was somehow a part of for whatever reason, even though Gustafsson.
What a boneheaded move.
Yeah, I thought Rick Bonus was the coach for the Winnipeg Jets, not the Minnesota Wild.
Idiot.
Idiot. God, you're so dumb, man. Yeah, so last night, it was a beautiful little Tuesday evening. That's why we're recording on Wednesday, because I think we were all focused solely on the game.
There was no way we were going to be able to put sentences together.
No, watching that
it's
game.
It's a lot. You know, we usually cuss a little bit in these podcasts, but that would have been a completely explicit, just curse-ridden episode back and literally back to front. So they won 4-0. Jake Oettinger gets the first shutout of the playoffs in the Stanley Cup for any team. And yeah, dominant. Tyler Seguin has absolutely stepped up in the role that Joe Pavelski was filling before he was unceremoniously given the exit from this series, maybe completely. But yeah, Patrick, what are your thoughts on last night? And what are your thoughts kind of overall now that we are up 3-2? Friday night in Minnesota, and then Sunday, game seven, if needed, back in Dallas.
So last night was the first, like, truly stress-free game of the series, in my opinion.
Yep.
It started out stressful, of course, and we can discuss further that hit on Foxa and all of the hullabaloo that followed. But defensively, Otter was tested with a quality chance, like, maybe a handful of times. Not he had good rebound control. They had one or two breakaways at most that he handled. I think one of them they didn't even get a shot on goal, which is embarrassing. But overall, the defense was solid. The penalty kill was stellar. I want to say I don't have on hand their PK stats. I know they were 0-3. Minnesota was 0-3 on the power play, but I think they may have gotten 3 shots total, the 6 combined minutes of the power play. So they just look disjointed. I mean, having to come from behind after literally the first 3 minutes is never easy. But dude, if you're bad at the penalty kill, playing a style that is conducive to committing penalties is certainly a choice. I wouldn't say it's a good one, but it is a way to go about it. But the grit first nonsense, like maybe scoring should be first and then grit can follow after. But what do I know?
Yeah, I completely agree. Jason, curious to get your thoughts. Obviously, once we get your thoughts on this, we're going to dive right into the Foligno hit, which led to him getting a 5-minute major and a game misconduct, which saw him leave the game literally 2 minutes into the entire match. So,
right.
Jason, how did you feel about the win from your perspective? Let's take the penalty kill from the Wild or lack thereof out of the situation. What really stood out to you and kind of from what you saw?
I mean, it's kind of hard to take the PK out because that's what it was all game. It felt like,
I mean, really, it's what it's been all series.
Right. That's and that, like, to echo what Patrick was just saying about, if you're going to play this kind of style of hockey, you got to be better about killing it, because that's not going to help. I mean, no joke. I mean, that's all it is. I have not seen our special teams this on fire, like, ever.
And you know who's leading the charge? It's funny enough, too, because we've been talking about the Renaissance all mm-hmm. season. Jamie Benn, he's back. He's playing like he played when he won the Art Ross Trophy. But you know who's been kind of overshadowing everyone? It's that wily old veteran with fantastic abdominal muscles, Tyler Seguin. He has just stepped up in such a prolific way mm-hmm. that I don't think anyone expected him to do so.
Yep.
Like, he ended last night on Tuesday, 1 goal, 1 assist, 2 points, 4 shots on goal. The only other person to have more points than Tyler Seguin last night on Tuesday was the guy who's playing better than anyone in the playoffs right now, and that's Roope Hintz, with 3 points on 3 assists, 2 shots on goal. It's just, this team is clicking on all cylinders, and it's just a shame how game one kind of played out. Not from a hockey standpoint, because it was a goalie showdown at the end of it. You had Gustafsson and you have Ottinger, and they are playing out of their minds. They're keeping everyone up till the next day, 1 a.m., past 1 a.m. I mean, it was a very solid hockey game, but it also set the tone right away for, I think, Pete DeBoer to understand what kind of game the Wild were going to bring forth to the Stars. And DeBoer has made the proper adjustments. He's had the conversations. He said, look, these guys are going to come for you in one way, shape, or form. You have to be ready. You have to be calm. And I think we've seen kind of that veteran presence of, and I hate to say it, and I'm actually going to compliment him in two different ways, guys like Ryan Suter, who have been at this game for much longer than really most of the guys on this Dallas Stars roster, excluding, you know, one or two guys like a Jamie Benn, Luke Glendinning, or a Joe Pavelski. So I think that veteran presence of Suter saying, listen, we can mess with them, we can get in their heads, but don't let it escalate to the point where we're gonna get in trouble. Because they do have a potent offense when they are triggering, even though they really haven't at all, seemingly, over the last few games. But, man, we needed that win last night. Not because of, obviously, the fact that we go up 3-2 against them, but like Pat, you were saying, from a stress level, that was so welcome to get that first one and then the second one, and then just kind of feel like, okay, we are in control of this game right now. And, you know, if they can just play their game, play smart, then I think they're going to be okay. And they ended up coming out on top. Now they're on top in the series 3-2, and we go back to Minnesota. It has been confirmed, by the way, another 8:30 scheduled, heavy quotation marks, start on Friday, which means easily 9 p.m. is when the game's going to start. But I will kick it back over to you, Pat. you know, we have been extremely hard on Ryan Suter all season long. He has made multiple mistakes. He has a very unfriendly contract, even though it's much more unfriendly for the Wild, who are paying $7.5 million of his contract this season, and I believe next season, before it drops down into like the 700,000 range for an eternity. Which, by the way, if the Stars, I don't want to get ahead of myself, can win this series, how sweet will it be to have not only bumped them out of the playoffs and in a very dramatic series, but also know that we bumped them out of the playoffs while they're paying one of our top minute eating defensemen at the same time. It just a little like a, you know, how we talk about winners get sprinkles. Those are the sprinkles I want to see raining over our ice cream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, we have been hard on Suter for a multitude of reasons, but
warranted, by the way.
Yeah, he's made a lot of boneheaded plays, a lot of leaving his defense partner Miro Heiskanen out to dry, and subsequently leaving Otter out to dry.
Yep.
But that has not been present this series almost at all. Maybe one or two where, like, okay, I can kind of see why you would play it that way, but probably not the best way to go about it. But there have been no glaring errors. He's actually leading the team in +4, averaging almost 23 minutes on ice per game. He is... been a stabilizing presence. Yeah, he has 12 penalty minutes, but I wouldn't put too much stock into that. This series, it's been kind of bonkers how the games have been called, but he's been physical. He's been hounding Kaprizov, and that's one of the I'll call it a conspiracy theory.
Okay, that's good.
That I've seen online is that he actually broke one of Kaprizov's ribs in the first game, and that's why he's been so absent. Not that he's been shut down and shadowed by both Suter and Heiskanen, and he has 2 seconds max to make a decision when he's on the puck, and he's not making the right decisions, and he's not putting the puck on net. He only has 9 shots this series. So Suter's done a great job of bottling the top line. He's done a great job of not being drawn into the shenanigans after the whistle. He stayed out of it. He's really been what I wish we could see in the regular season, but now that we're seeing it in the postseason, I'm not going to complain, because he was one of the question marks for me personally, was how is he, I know he's a veteran, he's 38 years old, how's he going to play? But man, it's been a really pleasant surprise, and if he can keep it up, then we have a true top four defenseman. I mean,
yep.
Yanni's been kind of hit or miss a little bit, but he's been that all season. So
he not really surprising. Has.
But him and Miro as a pairing looks like a true shutdown top defensive pairing. And there's nothing we can say that hasn't been said about Miro already. I mean, he's just incredible. So we won't get into it. But yeah, wanted to give Ryan Suter credit where it's due. I've actually been defending him in comments online quite a bit, which I almost never do.
That's true, dude. You're so like, I mean, we all are though.
Here's what's a little bit of a bummer, and I'm not trying to bring down the vibe, because we're feeling good. We're very confident right now as a group. I think I can say collectively. Right. But Hakanpaa to me is completely fallen off. He was brought into the Stars organization, and I've said this before, and I'll say it until he's gone, which the reason I'm saying this is because he is signed through next season, and his salary does get bumped up to $2 million next season, which doesn't affect the cap, but whatever. He was third in hits when he was brought to the Stars organization. Since then, I don't think he has cracked not just the top 25, but even like the top 50 in hits. And I'm sorry, but he's not that great of a defenseman. He's just not. He's big. He is a big guy that hits. or so we thought. So for me, I want to see a little bit more physicality out of him, maybe heading into the next series or maybe heading into next season. That's just me personally. It is what it is. He's 6'5", 218 pounds. You've got to push people around. So that all being wrapped up, let's get into the two probably biggest stories right now in Stars lore. The first story is what we've all kind of alluded to. Well, depending on what side you're on, the quote-unquote questionable hit on our sweet boy Roddick Foxa from Foligno on Tuesday night, like we said, we talked a little bit about before, resulted in a 5-minute major and a game misconduct. Foligno's out of the game. From that moment, if I'm a Wild fan, I know this game is pretty much done. It changes the entire complexity of the game. Foligno has been the loudest player on the Wild, and I would even argue in saying on both sides, he's been the loudest player with his play on the ice and his comments off the ice. Now, here's my take on the whole thing. The officiating has been atrocious across the board in the entirety of the playoffs.
So bad.
Starting with the hit from Dumba to Pavelski. Now, we've already had this discussion. I've already said I don't want to talk about it anymore because it just brought the worst out of, honestly, both fan bases. But that, to me, warranted more of a 5-minute major and a game misconduct than the hit that Foligno laid on Foxa on Tuesday night, because Foligno and Foxa coming together was much more of a, you know, you look at kind of what the explanation was. Foxa was catching the puck. He can't close his hand around it, so he has to drop it, exposing himself to a certain degree. Foligno's coming in. He's going to hit Foxa, so that's where I'm like, you know what? Whatever. You're going to initiate contact. That's your fault. But I don't think the knee-on-knee was intentional whatsoever. So for me, it was kind of like a little bit of, hey, sorry for being so terrible in game one whenever Joe Pavelski was laid concussed on the ice from a hit that was arguably questionable, depending on the angle that you looked at. So here's a bone. I don't want to say a makeup call because I don't think it was the same officiating crew, but here is a, hey, we messed up on game one as officials. We're not going to mess up on this one. But once Foligno left the ice, the Stars won that game. So that's how I felt about it. I don't think it was a malicious hit. I will say one more thing before I kick it over to you guys to get your opinions. If you continue to poke the bear like Foligno has, and you continue to say that the officials are bullshit and say that their calls are bullshit, and you come out publicly frustrated, which I get, I understand, because as Stars fans, we've been frustrated with calls as well, you are automatically putting a target on your back for every on-ice official in the NHL. The more you complain about it, the more that people are going to focus on it, a la ding dong head coach. I don't even know his name right now because I don't care. The head coach from the Minnesota Wild comes out and says, well, this team is diving in Dallas. Now look at the Wild. Look how much us as Stars fans are realizing the Wild are starting to dive because the Wild fans and the head coach want to say that we're diving. Well, now we're going to focus on when you do it. So that's kind of my thing. You kind of screwed yourself. You shot yourself in the foot when you started complaining about the referees. And so you gave them something to look for, and they found it. They booted you, and you got your asses kicked on Tuesday night because of it. There was nobody else on the ice that could do what Foligno did. Ryan Reeves is not a good hockey player. He is a bully. He is a thug on the ice. That is his persona. He's much like, you know, like Paul Bissonnette, Biz Nasty. Everyone loves Biz Nasty. But he even comes out. He's like, I'm not a hockey player. I got lucky if I scored a goal in a season. That's Ryan Reeves to me. He gets lucky if he scores at least 10 points to 20 points in a season. He's not good. That was your guy. So, Jason, what do you think about the whole situation before we get into the other big story that kind of more or less dropped today?
Man, I had to agree, though, with you. I didn't think the hit was super malicious at all. I think it was kind of like wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah.
I understand his leg may have gotten out. Totally get it. Shit happens, man. This is also hockey as well. And I'm glad everybody seems to be okay from the situation. But yeah, like
Foligno's feelings might be really hurt.
Oh no. Suck it up, Buttercup. Wrong place, wrong time, man.
Yep.
Get your shit together. But also, like you said, though, the game did turn. And the Stars kept their foot on the throttle, man. And they took it. They saw an opening for it, saw an opportunity, and they took advantage. And I'm so proud of this team. So fucking proud of this team. And I'm excited for what Sagan's been doing, man. He's leading this team. Like, him and Bennett, man. Tyler, Sagan. Oh, my gosh. Sagan. Nintendo Ben, oh my gosh, I know where I'm getting at, but
figure it out,
dude. It's been
Bandai.
It's been great to see them like just take control of this team and be the veterans that they need to be. Because
it's been Ben in the regular season, and then Sagan has stepped up and taken the place of Joe Pavelski in the postseason. Because you could, it's crazy. If you look back at game one, how the complexity of the game changed the moment Joe Pavelski was taken off the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fast forward to last night's game, the same exact thing with Foligno. At the moment he leaves the ice, the entire complexity changes from the viewpoint of the Minnesota Wild. So, Pat, what were your thoughts on the hit between Foxa and Foligno, which, by the way, I do want to say Foxa did come back, thankfully. What a warrior. I've been admittedly a little bit hard on him at times this season, but, you know, he does a phenomenal job on the PK. So it was really good to see him come back and kind of a more or less middle finger to Foligno. From a certain standpoint of like, you may have taken me out for a little bit, but I'm not done. I'll see you on Friday when you get back, when we take you guys and leave you back in Minnesota when we take game six. So
we are not going home.
So I'm of the opinion that you guys are. I don't think it was malicious. I probably wouldn't even call it intentional. I think it was just he did what he has done all series, which is he wanted to absolutely fucking tee off on somebody, and Foxa adjusted last second to try and play the puck, and Foligno, being the big lug that he is, was not able to adjust. But all you have to do is look at the first four games and you don't get the benefit of the doubt. Like, you've been drawing penalties, you've been committing penalties, you tried to launch Marchment into the third row behind the bench and whiffed and tried to say, oh, he high-sticked me. No, dude, you just completely, you fucked it up.
Yeah.
And so when you combine all of that with, I don't know that I would call that one a launch, and the hit on Foxa certainly was just accidental, but you can't, they don't make calls like that based on intent. Your knees hit, he can say hit the thigh, whatever. It looked knee to knee, in my opinion. So you don't get the benefit of the doubt. And I think a lot of this, which is the next point that I was going to bring up, this all goes back to the coaching culture that's been on display since after the first game. I had it pulled up here. You look at Pav's hit, which I agree was worse. That one seemed much more intentional and much more unnecessary. DeBoer said, we have the best officials in the world. They called a five, they reviewed it, which is the right thing to do. If they reviewed it and decided it wasn't a bad hit, then, you know, I guess it's not for me to argue with that. They got to look at it at multiple different angles, and that was the decision they made, so we've got to live with that. Which I think is a reasonable, straddling the line comment from DeBoer. It's not inflammatory. It's not saying, yeah, the refs really fucked this one up and we're pissed about it. Mm-hmm. Saying, hey, there's nothing, what's done is done. There's nothing we can do about it now. No point bitching about it.
Yep.
That's a, hey, just made a human call. That's what they saw. That's what they saw, man. We can't.
Yeah.
That's a situation given to us. Let's move forward.
Exactly. Now, us as fans, we can come on here all day long and say, yeah, those bullshit. It should have been a major and an ejection, a suspension. But that's our right as fans. Our opinions have no impact on the outcome of the game.
Right.
Now, I firmly believe that if you start poking the bear that is the refs, your leash is going to be a lot shorter. And I think that's partially what we're seeing. And that's twofold between the comments from Dean Evason, who, my God, man, that guy is terrifying.
He looks like he could kill.
He looks like he's the coach from Iceland.
Yeah. Yeah. Like aged a little bit. You're right.
Honestly, hold on. I had a point that I wanted to make about Iceland. Sorry, I meant to bring this up earlier when we were talking about when Foligno went off earlier. How early in the game it was. It was like that scene whenever the one Bash brother, like accidentally knocked over the ref, like super early in the game, and they had to play without him, like 7 seconds into the game or whatever the hell it was. It just kind of reminded me of that. Sorry.
No, we appreciate that.
All good.
We love a good callback.
On the other side, you look at Evason's comments. Our team, the Minnesota Wild, don't dive.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, he was responding in particular to DeBoer saying, when you pre-scout him, Minnesota takes penalties. They're the sixth most penalized team in the league. We're ready for that. That's not taking a shot. That's just statistics, and they take a lot of penalties. They have the third worst penalty differential in hockey behind the Coyotes and the Ducks. Not exactly high esteem company. And so for him to try and play the refs and get the embellishment calls, which almost never get called. I mean, the four this series is the most I've seen in an entire playoffs, let alone five games. And the two last night were whatever, like, didn't make any difference. But that combined with Foligno actively diving and saying, oh, I was just kidding. Like, I was just making fun of them because they dive. Like, dude, come on.
Mm-hmm.
It's childish and it doesn't do your team any favors if that, in my opinion, is showing up the refs, which you get in trouble with that in baseball all the time. You know, you draw a line on the plate, you're gone.
Yep.
So while they can't necessarily eject players like that, and I'm glad that they don't, they can probably look with a bit of a microscope at what's going on. So I think it comes down to culture. DeBoer said, we're not going to bother with it. We're going to play the game, and whatever happens, happens. And Evason has bitched, and Foligno has bitched at every opportunity. And you know what? If you don't play dirty or gritty, if you don't want to get called for a bunch of penalties, it's that easy.
You're right. You're 100% right. And as
that
we
was
heard,
that was a tangent. Sorry.
No, it was good. As
it was
we heard
sassy
before,
synopsis. If you
yeah, it was yeah, a bet, sassy yeah. synopsis. You know, we just didn't know it was coming, and we. I love when we're getting unexpected sassy synopsis, but you know, that just kind of goes Pete DeBoer. Like we've talked about before, it's been in the news. You know, he was in law school. It was such a non-biased, you know, response from him. But I do want to end this episode on a very, very, very exciting and high note. I kind of alluded to that. There was another big story that dropped today. And that story, it's kind of a two-part. The first part is Riley Tufte has been sent back down to the Texas Stars, which is great for the Texas Stars, you know, as they make their run for the Calder Cup. You know, he's one of their most prolific scorers on the team, you know, a lot of size. But there is a big reason that all happened, and that is because Joe Pavelski is slotted as a game-time decision for Friday night, and he has been skating more often, so we may see the return of Captain America on Friday night. And so I want to ask this. I'm going to ask you first, Pat, because someone actually brought this up when we posted it on our socials today. I got the report from Brian Ray, friend of the show, very critical of my spelling abilities, which is understandable, but he also spells his name weird in my defense.
In that
do you, way. And you know, I actually want to give this person a shout out. So if you guys will bear with me for just a moment, I'm going to go to our Facebook because I want to give this person the shout out that they deserve for asking this question of us, because it was a very good question from a standpoint of the Dallas Stars and the coaching perspective. And I almost found it. I'm wasting so much of everyone's time. Don't cut this out of the show. Leave it. There we go. Theo Hamilton. So here's an interesting question. The team has been able to find some chemistry without Pavs right now. Do you throw him back in the lineup and risk messing that up, or do you leave him out, hopefully win the series, and have him back fresh for round two? I responded with, this is a great question. It's hard to say based on how well Sagan has played. That being said, maybe try Pavs, and if it doesn't mesh, adjust the lines. Either way, it's a great problem to have. So now I pose, Pat, first to you. Do you automatically slot Pavs back in the top line on Friday night if he's available, or do you continue with Sagan on the top line and try to adjust the lines, you know, fitting to where Pavs maybe is on that second or third line even, or even a fourth line? Limit his minutes a little bit, just see how comfortable and how well he plays on the ice, and go from there.
I don't think you put him in the top line just because you do want to try and minute. None of us can talk tonight, or maybe it's just me. You want to try and limit his minutes, especially given the context of the rest of the series.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you put him on the third line, leave Sagan up there with Robo and Hintz. That's been working pretty well. You don't want to change it up last minute. Not that going back to what works is a bad thing, but I think if you can put him on a line with Domi and Marchment, those guys will
shout out Marchment, by the way, who finally scored a goal.
I mean, credit where credit's due, man. Everywhere else, though, too, man. He's been a big hitter.
Yeah, he's been really great, but I think Domi and Marchment will keep enough heat off of Pavelski to kind of protect him from too much contact. And then when it comes to the power play, I think you do want Pavs to go back to the first unit just because the second unit seems like they need Sagan's ability. The first unit can score with or without him. Not so much the second. And for whatever reason, you know, it is what it is, but I think getting him reacclimated to the power play with the first unit would be good, but not with the first line. So that's a roundabout way to say no.
Oh, I think it's fair. Jason, what about you? You're on the hot seat. You're Pete DeBoer. What are you going to do with the top lines? Are you going to put Pavelski back in, or are you going to keep Sagan on the top line and continue to let him flourish and maybe keep just a short leash just in case things go south?
No, I'm right with you, Patrick, man. Putting him in that three line, man, or three or four, like, really, he doesn't need to be out there as much. His presence needs to be felt, and I think he can make that impact in the shorter amount of time that he would be out there, just naturally. But yeah, let's rock with what's working at the moment. You know, as the old adage goes, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And currently this team doesn't seem to be broken. We fell off the wagon a little bit in game three, but I think that was to be expected. I think when I initially predicted this series, I said Stars in five. I think we all initially thought game one would go our way. Mm-hmm. And for all intents and purposes, aside from the actual outcome, that game went our way, I think. I mean, we showed some nice pizzazz. I mean, Patrick, you and I talked about it a lot last episode where we just kind of broke it down a little bit more. We weren't super upset at the outcome. Like, we just showed that this team was ready for this series. It just, as the goalies just had their showdown, you know, that's kind of what happened. And there was going to be a game where you would fall off the wagon. Game three was that game for the Stars. I really think the series should have just been over yesterday. Obviously, game one should have went our way, but whatever, it didn't. And so here we are, game six. We're going to go clinch on Friday.
On the road.
On the road, dogs.
We're just doing Minnesota a favor and doing it there in their hometown so they don't have to travel. They can just pick their stuff up and go away.
Yep.
So really what it boils down to from my viewpoint is, you know, you have a lot going in your favor as Pete DeBoer. You can either, like we said, you can slot Pavelski right back in the top line, or you can leave Sagan and let him continue to flourish. Regardless, we have a lot of riches going in our favor right now. So just an exciting time. We're extremely excited for the playoffs. We're extremely excited for this first series. I think we can all agree that if we can take the momentum that we built on Tuesday into Friday, then I think we see the series end on Friday night in Minnesota. So that being said, happy to be back with you guys. Happy to be back in the years of the French fries. From the bottom of my heart, it's a good time. It's hockey time. It's playoff time. So that being said, Pat, I'll let you send them out, and we'll wrap this one up.
Yeah, stay sassy.
Whew.
And stay moist.
And don't for any reason, even if they catch Nathan MacKinnon with the stunned face on camera as the Kraken go up 2-1, forget your Kermit tattoos.
Probably missed trip there.
Oh, yeah, that's why he's...